Brothers, I have a pleasant duty to ask Cardinal Cupich to come forward. He has a really fine announcement to make to us, coming from Chicago.
Today, Pope Francis proclaimed venerable servants, a list of servants of God in 8 decrees, and among them was Augustus Tolton, who served as a priest. who served as a priest in Chicago until his untimely death at age 43. The first African-American priest in the United States, he was born into a family of slaves. So this is a proud moment for the African-American Catholic community in our country, but also, I think, for all of our priests who at this time are having their own challenges in this moment and should not be overlooked in terms of how they are servants of God, ministering to our people with devotion each day.
Thank you, Cardinal Cupich. Great news. Want to do a little bit of explaining of electronic voting. Before we begin our voting today, we need, as always, to do an explanation of electronic voting. The electronic voting system is designed to assure both the fact that a member has voted and the confidentiality of his vote, in the same way that signed envelopes do. Each voting keypad has been encoded to ensure that the proper distinctions are maintained between the Latin and Eastern bishops and diocesan bishops and auxiliary bishops. The computer tally will take account of this. The validity of the results will continue to be confirmed by the tellers. And if there are any difficulties with the system, we are prepared to substitute paper ballots immediately. Monsignor Bransfield, will you please explain the mechanics of the system and give us a practical demonstration?
Thank you, Eminence. Your Eminences, Your Excellencies, before coming into the room, you should have picked up an electronic voting pad. I'm pleased to welcome again our vendor for the electronic voting system, Option Technologies, administered by Mr. Michael Crabb, who is here to assist with the process. Each time a vote is proposed to the body, you will see on the screen in the front of the ballroom the wording of the action for which you are voting. At the appropriate time to vote, Cardinal DiNardo will ask if the body is prepared to vote. For actions calling for a yes, no, or abstain vote, please press 1 for yes, 2 for no, and 3 for abstain. Please then press send at the end of your vote. You will notice the keypads have a display screen. Once your vote is collected and counted, the word received will be displayed on your voting pad screen. It's very important that you not place your vote until indication is given that the voting is open. Otherwise, your vote might not be counted. A countdown clock will appear on the screen when the vote has opened. The vote closes when the countdown clock indicates that the time has run out. You will have 30 seconds to vote on each action item. There will then be a brief window of time while the computer tallies the entire vote and the results are displayed on the screen. If you make a mistake in that 30-second window and you wish to change your vote, press the correct number, or numbers as the case may be, that you intended to vote for prior to the close of the vote, and that will automatically replace your incorrect number. Individual names will not be associated with the vote, although the computer will record which bishops voted. Please do not remove the voting pad from the room, and please leave the pad at your place at the end of the day. We will now have 2 practice votes. On practice vote number 1, please indicate your status by voting 1 for Latin Church Diocesan Bishop or equivalent in law, 2, Latin auxiliary bishop. 3, Eastern Church diocesan bishop, or eparch, or equivalent in law. And 4, Eastern auxiliary bishop. Diocesan and apostolic administrators should vote as a 1 or 3, depending on whether they are members of the Latin church or an Eastern church. Auxiliary bishops who serve as administrators of diocese will vote as diocesan bishops. So I'd ask that the vote be opened. The voting is open. Please vote now. Move all those waters to the left. I can't see this screen. The voting is now closed. Please display the vote. We have 145 Latin Church diocesan bishops, or equivalent in law, 65 Latin auxiliary, 7 Eastern, and 2 Eastern auxiliary bishops. Practice vote number 2 is a yes or a no vote. The question is, I'm planning to attend the Friday morning reflection. Please vote 1 for yes, 2 for no, or 3 for abstain. Please open up the voting. Voting is open. Please vote now. Voting is now closed. Please display the vote. So 80 will be attending Friday for plans. 6 or 8 abstain. Thank you, Your Eminence. I believe we're ready to proceed.
Okay. As we debate and vote on action items right now, when the time comes, please raise a green card to speak in favor of something, a red card to speak against, a yellow card for questions of clarification, and a white card for a point of order. No other colors are allowed. No, just kidding. That's why don't we go now to the Committee on Priorities and Plans. Is Archbishop Vigneron ready?
Yes, he's here.
Okay. While he's coming. Brother Bishops, as you know, the USCCB bylaws place the responsibility for proposing strategic priorities upon the committee priorities and plans. And in preparation for this task, every 4 years, the CPP asks the entire body of bishops to tell them what's on their mind so they can, prepare strategic priorities that reflect our views. So right now we have Archbishop Vigneron accompanied by members of the CPP Strategic Priorities Working Group, Archbishop Dennis Schnurr and Bishops Liam Carey and Edward Scharfenberger, to present the proposed 2021 to 2024 strategic priorities and emphasis areas. They present them to us for our review and approval. The timing for this presentation is very important because we will be asking our committees and subcommittees and departments to draft their portion of the 2021 to 2024 strategic plan in just next month. So at this time, brothers, I want to yield the floor to Archbishop Vigneron and ask him to present to us the proposed strategic priorities and emphasis areas for the 2021 to 2024 strategic planning cycle. Okay, Archbishop Vigneron.
Thank you, Your Eminence. After 2 consultations with the body of bishops and 1 with the National Advisory Council, we've come to the point today where the Committee on Priorities and Plans is ready to fulfill its bylaw-directed task of proposing priorities for the next strategic plan, the one that would guide us through 2021 through 2024. And so that's what I'm offering today. I'd like to preface my presenting these priorities and emphasis areas by saying that throughout our work, we have understood that our task has been to offer in an ordered and well-articulated form the results of the three consultations, two with the body of bishops and one with the National Advisory Council. And so these are not the committee recommendations about what the priorities for our conference should be, but rather these are our formulations of the material we heard from you, from what we heard from the body of bishops and from what we heard from the National Advisory Council through the consultations. We have made an effort to see the shapes that are formulated and to formulate and to articulate these in a way that is sufficiently broad that it will encourage collaboration across all of our committees and offices, whether that's a formal or an informal collaboration. And of course, to say that these priorities take as a presumption the mandates that are already included in our bylaws. The proposed strategic priorities you have seen are based on the inputs I mentioned. Our committee has done its best to represent your inputs in the form of a strategic priority statement. There are four of them, and supporting emphasis areas that allow us to more clearly express the priorities and concerns conveyed by the bishops throughout the consultations. The consultations began in November of 2018 when we asked the regions to provide input for the new strategic priorities. And then in January, there was further an online survey about priorities that went to us through the Bishop's Only website. The National Advisory Council also provided their inputs on the strategic priorities through a nearly identical priorities survey. So about the timing, it's directed by the need to provide to the committees, the subcommittees, and the departments what they need as direction as in July they begin to do their work in transforming this basic set of priorities into operational plans. And those will be submitted for us to review by the end of January 2020. Now, at the March meeting of the Committee on Priorities and Plans earlier this year, the committee began to fulfill its responsibility for this cycle. As I mentioned, that effort was informed by your November regional meetings, the January survey, and the work we received from the NAC. And that led us to efforts in March and April to develop strategic priorities and emphasis areas which you now have presented at your place. The proposed strategic priorities, as we formulated them on your behalf, were shared with the body of bishops through the documentation that was offered for this meeting. It came in electronic form on May 3, and it came in hard copy on May the 9th. Following their distribution and documentation, that set of priorities and emphasis areas, the committee received feedback from five standing committees: Catholic Education, ecumenical and interreligious affairs, evangelization and catechesis, pro-life activities, and religious liberty. On Monday, the committee considered all of this feedback and edited several of the originally proposed priorities and emphasis areas based on what we heard from those committees. The changes the committee adopted based on what we received from these other five committees are now reflected in a revised set of priorities and emphasis areas that you have at your place. So, before we review what we're proposing, I would reiterate that the current version represents, to the best of our ability, the input that we've gotten from the brothers in the surveys, from the NAC, and from the committees. And I want to thank the committees for your collaboration in this process. Before I go to those four priority areas with the emphasis areas underneath, I'd like to explain to you a little bit about the timeline and why we're coming to you with this action item today. We need to do this work today so that we can begin to move forward on the process of the strategic plan for 2021-2024. After the end of this general meeting in July, our committees, their subcommittees, and the departments will commence work on their portion of the strategic plan. They'll work to transform these priority areas into comprehensive operational plans whose purpose is to gather together the talents of committee members, staff members, and other resources so that we can fulfill our mandates and the priorities, all for the sake of the mission. That sounds a little Hegelian, but it's meant how it's all supposed to fit together. Huh. It's quite rational. Huh. So, to provide the committees, the subcommittees, and the departments the guidance they need, we need to have this discussion today. We would next see these priorities along with a full strategic plan in November of 2020, where we will be asked to approve that. So that's the process that we're following. So now I'd like to present to you the four strategic priorities along with the supporting emphases. And so with your permission, Your Eminence, I would have in mind to read through each of the priorities and its supporting emphasis, and then pause for your comments after we do each of the four. And then I can repeat that. We'll do each one and take comments after each priority. I think that makes more sense, if that's acceptable. Upon completion of the presentation and the discussion, then it'll be up to you, Your Eminence, to call the question when you think we've had enough discussion. So the first one, and by the way, these are not in any order of priority. They simply are presented as a set of lists. And we worked to follow a very, what has in the past proved to be a useful format with a title and then a verb to have the sense that we're moving toward the achievement of goals. So the first one, evangelization. And the priority, as we've formulated what we heard from you, form a joyful band of missionary disciples. Emphasis areas to flesh this out. Evangelize a culture in need of hope, especially the religiously unaffiliated. And on this point, I'm grateful to the Evangelization and Catechesis Committee to have had their input on this emphasis area. The second, invite and empower youth and young adults to become missionary disciples. Number three, foster an evangelizing focus in catechesis and Catholic schools. Number four, communicate more effectively how the faith transforms lives. Number five, offer our society an account for the hope that is within us. And six, acknowledge and welcome the gifts and talents that the Hispanic community brings to Christ Church. So, Your Eminence, on this first priority and emphasis areas, any questions or discussion?
Comments and observations by the brothers on this first priority. Yes, Bishop Codd.
I'm wondering if you can help to discern the difference between number one and number five. Evangelize a culture in need of hope. Offer our society an account for the hope that is within us. And having asked that question, let's say that you can't really, even with Hegel's help, come up with a clear distinction between those two. Would it be possible, just for the sake of simplicity, to have number one be the additional material, so something along the lines of evangelize the religiously unaffiliated, or unbelievers and the religiously unaffiliated?
I think I don't need Hegel to help me on that one, Bishop. We saw them as different in light of much of what we've heard about the difference between making the proclamation of Christ and the need for an apologetics. That came through in what we heard. I think it was in line with what the Committee on Evangelization and Catechesis said yesterday. So we heard that those are different kinds of works that we need to be engaged in.
Bishop Pagans, is it? Yes, please.
A comment on number six. I think if we acknowledge and welcome the gifts and talents that the diverse communities bring to Christ Church. We have Filipinos, we have Vietnamese, we have Africans, and it looks like we're just singling out one particular group. Just a comment.
Bishop, what we were trying to do is to respond to what we heard as a particular focus that we need to keep as a result of the Quinto Encuentro. That's where that's coming
from. Well, you might keep that for the next one.
Pardon?
You might keep this one in mind for 5 years from now.
All right.
Thanks, Owen.
Are there others? With a hand up there on the left, no?
And we've also heard, I just will say this as a comment, from the body, a concern to be sure that we are accepting that we're moving in harmony with the pastoral initiatives of the Holy Father. And so, in fact, we've even quoted from him in the title of this, Forming a Band of Joyful Missionary Disciples.
Archbishop Inyaron, one question I have is, what do you mean by an evangelizing focus in catechesis? Is there a specific?
What we've heard about this is that a catechesis that leads to an encounter with Christ and a decision for him. Sometimes what goes along with the idea of a personal encounter, a presentation of the faith that always aims for decision.
Okay, all right. Is there anyone else with a comment on this first section on evangelization? Bishop Coyne.
May I suggest a change to number two? I think the work of evangelization, and I know it's covered in all of these things, but just to make it, is the work of all Catholics. So I would wonder if we would consider invite and empower all Catholics, comma, especially youth and young adults, comma, to become missionary disciples. Because I find some of the most effective missionary disciples in my church are some of our older Catholics.
We could consider that. These notes will be given to the committees to have them flesh out these formulations. But I think what we would all want to talk about, if we do such a thing, what does that do to the idea that we need to have a more laser focus on youth and young adults? That's what we were trying to capture with this formulation, to be sure that in all of our work, that remained very prominent. But we'll take that into account.
Why don't you continue, Archbishop Inura?
The second, and you will see that the emendation, the revision that comes in response to the pro-life activity is presented through the use of the red. So it now reads, life and dignity of the human person. Serve the common good as a leaven in a free society. Emphasis area one, work to heal the scourge of hatred based on race and or religion. And this emendation came as a result of a consultation with ecumenism and interreligious affairs. And we've checked with Bishop Fab, and while he liked the original formulation, just focused on racism, his view is that this broader formulation is fine. So work to heal the scourge of hatred based on race and or religion. Protect and defend the dignity of migrants and refugees, of the poor and those on the peripheries. A new three, defend the right to life for all people, especially the unborn, elderly, sick and dying, persons with disabilities, and fight the advance of abortion, infanticide, assisted suicide, euthanasia, and the death penalty. And this emphasis area is very much in response to something that we received from the Pro-Life Activities Committee. Defend and secure religious liberty and freedom of association. 5, foster reverence for God's creation, our common home. And 6, articulate a convincing anthropology of the human person, male and female, as proclaimed by faith and affirmed by science and right reason. And this reformulation comes very much at the behest of Catholic Education, Evangelization Catechesis, Pro-Life Activities, and Religious Liberty.
Brothers, any comments or observations on this second point? Bishop Rosato? No?
Yes. Thank you. So, concerning the first one, the scourge of the racism is eliminated. But it seems to me racism doesn't mean that people hate people of other races, they look down on them. So it would seem to me that a better wording, my humble opinion, the scourge of racism and hatred based on race and so on. I don't know what you think about that. But.
Well, we tried to respond to the committee's suggestion of how to incorporate this and keep them succinct.
Okay, and just, well, to me, the reverence for God's creation, our common home, that is the major issue facing the world at this time. And I would put that as a number two, but that's my humble opinion.
Bishop, these are not meant to be any order of priorities.
Okay.
That would be a task beyond our minor wisdom, I think.
Thank you.
But you are right to note, I think, that this is an element that came out of the body in an attempt to pick up on the magisterium of our Holy Father with Laudato Si.
Bishop Pates? Somebody else.
In any of the four categories, I didn't see any relationship with the international community.
With the which community? I didn't
International community. And I might suggest that somewhere, especially it seems appropriate in the second one, to engage in relationship and support of the international Catholic community, as well as engagement in global justice and peace issues.
Bishop Pfeiffer, followed by Bishop Stowe.
Archbishop, point of clarity, under number four, vindicate the right to life.
That's gone.
Pardon me?
That was removed, and the elements in what had been the old four, which is now lined out, have been included in new number three.
Can you read that number three, please, for me?
Defend the right to life for all people, especially the unborn, elderly, sick and dying, persons with disabilities, and fight the advance of abortion, infanticide, assisted suicide, euthanasia, and the death penalty.
Okay. Infanticide, what were you referring to there in particular?
We're thinking of, I presume, and I could ask the chair of the pro-life activities about this, but my understanding was these procedures by which there is a live birth and then the baby is left to die.
Thank you. That's the point I wanted to make, that it would include this new terrible procedure that's even gaining support by some of our government leaders. So thank you.
Would I be correct in the way I've characterized that from pro-life activities?
Yes, Archbishop Vigneron. And it's become an increasing concern with some of the legislation on the state level. And at the federal level, we're trying to pass a bill right now that relates to this. So, yes.
Thank you.
Well, that's the point. So thank you very much.
Bishop Stowe.
I'd like to return to Bishop Rosas's comments and suggest a possible amendment for EA number one to retain the word racism, and it would still be concise if we said work to heal the scourge of racism and religious intolerance.
Thank you. We'll take that down.
Bishop McElroy.
I would just suggest adding a word on the environment, and that is, in most of these you have defend. In the environment it has foster reverence for, which is good, but you don't have defense or you don't have protect. I think one of those two words added to it would best exemplify what the Pope is speaking of, the immediacy and urgency of the danger to the environment.
Thank you.
Bishop Boyer?
Yes. Archbishop, just a question for clarification. When the committee was saying hatred based on race, okay, that's pretty understandable, and or religion, are we talking about those who are religious and hate people, or are we talking about people who hate people of religion?
What I understand when this came was hatred directed to someone because of that person or the religion of that group.
Because it really is ambiguous the way it's phrased there.
Everyone there? No, there is somebody? No. Okay. Archbishop Vigneron, would you continue on with the third strategic priority there?
And on this one, I would particularly express gratitude to the NAC. We received a lot of help from them in their input on this. So the name of it, Protect and Heal God's Children.
Bishop Kopacz, did you have your hand up you wanted to?
It's not up there now, but the point of fight the advance of nuclear weapons and any weapons of mass destruction regarding all the others there, that's a change in addition to that.
What I would say is, Bishop, that did not emerge in the surveys that we all turned in.
Okay. Thank you.
Archbishop Vigneron, if you continue.
So as I was saying, this one, we really owed a great debt to the National Advisory Council. The name, Protect and Heal God's Children, Restore Integrity, Foster Virtue. Emphasis Area 1, create and maintain safe environments through sound policies and procedures. Area 2, extend and ensure effective collaboration with the laity. 3, cultivate an ever-deepening spirituality of chastity and virtue. 4, nurture courageous and transparent reflection and leadership. 5, accompany survivors and embrace their witness.
Bishop Baker.
Thank you, Archbishop. And I just want to especially point out that the NAC did strongly emphasize the cultivating and ever-deepening spirituality of chastity and in virtue, and I hope we can find ways to really articulate that further. Just a general observation. I noticed the name Jesus Christ hasn't been mentioned in the course of this, and Pope Francis has always mentioned that missionary discipleship is an encounter with Christ that leads to all this. It might not hurt to throw that in there somewhere. Perhaps cultivate an ever-deepening spirituality of chastity and virtue as a result of a personal encounter with Christ or something. Hopefully somewhere his name could be mentioned. Thank you.
And what I'd, just to get back to the genre that we're dealing with, one of the advantages of having this as an emphasis area is it doesn't just become the work of one committee, but we hold ourselves to the agenda of cross-committee collaboration on all of these areas.
Archbishop Sample.
Just on priority number one there, I would hate to leave the impression that, you know, at least especially since 2002, that we have not created and maintained safe environments through our sound policies and procedures. Certainly, there's always more work that can be done. I don't deny that whatsoever. But could we perhaps say maintain and strengthen safe environments through sound policies and procedures in order to give some acknowledgement to, I think, the tremendous work that we have done as a conference, but also in our dioceses and the wonderful dedicated staff that we have who have done some tremendous work in helping us create those safe environments.
Thank you. Our aim had been to handle the point you're making with the formulation we had, and appreciate your offering another way to get at that. Thank you, Archbishop.
Archbishop Coakley.
Just a question of clarification. I'm wondering if number four could use a little more clarity, at least in my mind. Nurture courageous and transparent reflection and leadership. I'm not sure what transparent reflection actually
is. That's meant to talk about the fact that we do consultation and we engage in looking at these issues together.
Thank you.
Bishop Mum.
I know that the priorities are not given in any specific order, but anyone reading this may read that into it. So do we want to consider adding a disclaimer at the top? Note these are not given in any specific priority order.
I think that could be very helpful, Bishop, and it would be appropriate to have it not only for each emphasis area, but it is the case for each of the four area priorities as well. They're not meant to be ranked by priority.
Is there anyone else on this priority? Oh, I don't see. Archbishop, would you go to the fourth one?
Vocations. Equip all Christ's disciples for mission. Number one, foster lifelong discernment and formation to fulfill one's God-given vocation. Two, prepare for and sustain the living out of marriage and family life. Three, create a culture that nurtures consecrated life and holy orders. Four, encourage the laity in their mission to evangelize society.
Any comments or observations from the brothers on this? Yeah, there is a hand up there. Bishop George Thomas.
Archbishop, I'd like to propose just a slight expansion on number four under the Disciples for Mission. I'd like to add nine words, and that would be, it reads, encourage the laity in their mission to evangelize society, and I would add, and transform culture in the light of the gospel. Say a wording slightly more consonant with the teachings of the Vatican Council, and it would focus, by talking about culture, the laity's role in transforming in societal or social institutions, intellectual life, and the arts.
Bishop, could I ask, we can work on, do some tweaking if these are approved. It would help us to help the committees to hear how you, and I'm not challenging that it doesn't occur, but how in your understanding would that lead to across the conference work. That would be good for us to know.
Yeah.
If you could say a little bit about that.
I'm happy to. You want that in writing?
Right now, please, if you just...
Oh, yeah.
Because we're taking notes on this.
Yeah. I think there's a part of the mission and ministry of the laity, their vocation certainly, is to be missionary disciples, evangelizing others in their circle of influence. But also, the role of the laity has a much more expansive presence in society at large. And their presence in society brings the light of the gospel into the various places in which they work and serve. And that would certainly include various societal institutions, intellectual inquiry in universities, the arts, and I think it is it's an understanding that is a bit more expansive than that we have on paper, but also way more consonant with the understanding that it's found in the teachings of the Second Vatican Council.
Would I be correct to infer from what you say that it could, this sort of emphasis area might generate some energy in a specific focus, say in the domestic policy area, where we begin to think about that as a form of culture transformation and evangelization?
That's certainly.
Am I picking up on the point that you're making?
I think you do.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Archbishop.
Bishop Nesta.
And then Bishop Rocky.
This is a question on number four. And why is it there rather than in the first category? Just kind of because it's really dealing with evangelization, even though it's under vocation.
Well, it could have gone either way. You're right, Bishop. But here the focus is on formation for vocation. It would it's about the particular about the faithful themselves in their formation.
And Bishop Paprocki.
I want to raise this as a point of order, or maybe just a clarification. This seems to be presented as a non-amendable action item, and yet it seems like you're taking suggestions for rewording things. So when we vote on today, is that going to be final, or is there going to be something
that... What I would like to propose to the chair is that we do a definitive vote today with an authorization to do some minor tweaking. But it isn't amendable. It has not been an amendable item in the past. If that were to change, that's beyond what the committee does. I think that would have to come from the administrative to turn it into that.
Okay, thank you.
Bishop Estevez.
My comment is related to number three. I think that at the present moment, as I see it, there is a culture in all our prayers about consecrated life and holy orders. I think the great need is the praxis. There is a gap in the culture and the doing, the invitation, the mentoring. So probably that will come in the next phase in the as the priorities are fleshed out, but somehow I think that the real need is the praxis, not so much the culture.
Thank you, Bishop. And we certainly didn't think of the word culture here as a passive potential, but the matrix that produces action. And as I said, when these priorities go to the committees to develop their operational plan, what will go along with them are the comments that were said here so that they can keep them in mind as they develop their particular responses to the priorities.
Cardinal Tobin.
Thank you, Archbishop. I'm just, excuse me, curious about the meaning of the verb nurture in number three.
A culture that nurtures consecrated life and holy orders. I think we were looking for a word that talks about helping this effort to grow and expand.
Okay, I'm not sure the formulation is entirely clear, because I also wonder whether consecrated life and holy orders ought to nurture culture at the service of culture.
I would say, Your Eminence, what we heard was that the bishops give this a priority emphasis of nurturing the the culture that leads to people responding to consecrated life and holy orders.
Bishop Baldacchino.
Archbishop Vigneron, I'm really happy with the whole theme and the thrust of evangelization. I would like to continue on what Bishop Esteves mentioned, just to share a little bit that in the mind of St. Paul, vocation is the vocation to holiness, is the call to holiness. The charism is what comes after the different fruits. Not everyone is called to be a potato or an onion or a carrot. We can have many vegetables, but the root is always baptism. And so a lemon tree gives lemons without effort, and an orange tree gives oranges without effort. And so if we have to make an effort, maybe we should see whether we really have a lemon tree or an orange tree. Perhaps we should look into a little bit the evangelization, really, catechesis and the accompaniment, the nurturing. Thank you.
Thank you. I do think, number one, we attempted to write, articulate broadly enough to have in mind the call of all the faithful to be called to holiness.
That's all. Archbishop Vigneron, I'm not sure. We had talked earlier whether we should call for a vote on this.
Do you think we can get
I've heard enough. It's just like there's some basic accord, but there is still some more dimensions that have come out this afternoon that makes me somewhat hesitant about going for the vote yet.
Do you prefer to go?
I'm sorry? Oh, okay. All right, in light of it. What if we did a provisional vote? That is, we vote on these as provisional, but the comments that have been made today by some of the bishops, to my mind, at least add us to salt, a little more salt to these things, to give them some more distinction.
This is a strategy that our brothers used in 2015 to offer a provisional vote to say that these are on the right track, fundamentally sound, and they permit the committees to begin their work already in July, and then we can bring back to you a definitive text for your vote in November. If that seems to fit
that's,
your sense of the House.
Personally, I think that's good. I think that's good. So why don't we do that?
And the important thing is that we have a broad consensus. You know that some of the history for this is that some of us have been in the conference long enough to remember that there was a great concern that we were churning out work that didn't reflect a consensus mind of the whole body. And that's really why these are put together. And so it's important that they be a common mind, that then each organ, each committee, subcommittee can use as a touchstone so that we're all pulling together for some same basic direction. So we have developed this provisional vote formulation. You would be voting to say that you approve the proposed provisional strategic plan so that plan development can continue, and you will receive a revised formulation in November 2019. So committees can be confident they're not going down a rabbit hole or a dead end. So that's my motion, Your Eminence. Do the members approve the proposed provisional strategic priorities in order to allow plan development to continue while the Committee for Priorities and Plan revise the currently proposed 2021-24 strategic priorities.
Good. I like that. Do we just vote?
We would do an electronic vote.
Oh, okay.
Be prepared if the question would be displayed or the outlay would be displayed on the screen. We will be voting one for yes and two for no, three to abstain. Bishop Conlon.
Bishop Conlon. We just had the discussion. I don't know. If you want to discuss it, please do, Bishop Conlon.
That's what I'm asking. Is this proposed as a motion?
Yes.
Do they have it? Oh, he's setting it up.
We're working on it.
Yeah, it's a relatively. Silence in heaven for 1.5 hour.
Here is the action. Please vote one for yes, two for no, three to abstain. If we could, John, if they could open the vote. Voting is now open. Please vote now. Voting is closed. Please display the vote. And the motion passes. 213 yes, 8 no, 4 abstain. The motion passes.
Good.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Archbishop Vigneron.
As is customary, I'm going to thank the members of the committee and staff. And particularly, I need to thank the Holy Spirit. When we came to the March meeting with all of the data that came from the surveys, I was not optimistic about the forms that would emerge. But it was remarkable, especially to see how quickly those four areas presented themselves as the mind of the Episcopal Conference. And I'm very grateful to God for that, but especially grateful to all of us who, my co-workers for this project. Thank you.
Archbishop Vigneron, yes, we're very grateful. That's good work, very good work that has been done. This is a process that is important because it does show the mind of the bishops as we develop what will be some important priorities from 2021 on. All righty, what are we doing now, as they say? Oh, okay, voting. I'd like to invite Bishop Dealey forward and also Bishop Dorfler to present a particular action item.
Thank you, Your Eminence. For those of you who have had direct experience conducting a diocesan inquiry for a cause of canonization, you know that an important part of the process is receiving the opinion of the Regional Conference of Bishops on the appropriateness of initiating the cause. In August of 2018, Bishop John F. Dorfler of the Diocese of Marquette, submitted to Cardinal DiNardo a request to seek the opinion of this body on the cause for canonization of Irving, also known as Francis C. Houle. In accord with the USCCB's protocol governing such requests, it was referred to the Committee on Canonical Affairs and Church Governance for review. As you noted in the documentation that you have before you, the USCCB is not being asked to indicate its consent to initiate this cause. Rather, the consultation is an important expression of Episcopal collegiality, as this body is often an opportunity to express observations on the advancement of the cause on the local level. I now invite Bishop Dorfler to offer brief remarks about Irving, including what motivated him to accept the petition and the significance of his witness for the local and for the universal church.
Brother bishops, with joy I present for consultation the cause of the servant of God, Irving C. Houle, also known as Francis. I was approached by a group of the faithful from the Diocese of Marquette who asked that I consider opening a cause for his sainthood. Subsequently, the Irving C. Houle Association of the Faithful was established, which serves as the petitioner in this cause. Since you already have his biography in the meeting materials, allow me to highlight briefly a few points for your consideration as to the importance of this cause for the life of the church, and thus my rationale for accepting the petition. When I first spoke to Irving's wife and asked about her husband, her initial words to me were, "He was a wonderful husband and father. His pastor described him as the guy next door and a holy man." These brief descriptions highlight the importance and the relevance of the cause. In many ways, Irving was an ordinary guy, an athlete, a veteran, a husband and father, a fourth degree Knight of Columbus, and a diligent worker in retail and manufacturing. Irving can serve as an example of holiness for the ordinary guy. Do we not need such illustrations of how one can live a life of holiness in daily life? Do we not need such examples of faith lived out in all aspects of one's life, from family to the workplace? Also noteworthy is Irving's humility and self-sacrifice for his family and the healing of others. The extraordinary gifts of healing and the stigmata are further illustrations of how God chooses the lowly and the humble as his instruments. Thank you for your consideration.
Okay, so Archbishop Sample, Archbishop Sample, please.
I'd like to speak very much in favor of the conference's approval for this cause to move forward. Having known Irving personally myself, I came to know of Irving when I was pastor of one of the parishes very near to where Irving lived and had come to know about him. In fact, some of his family relatives were my parishioners. But it was after becoming bishop that I really got to know Irving. And the first time I met him, I didn't know who had walked into the sacristy after a confirmation celebration in one of the parishes. And this very kind, humble gentleman started talking to me. And I could not, and it was because I didn't know who I was talking to, but as he was talking to me, I honestly and truly noticed, we call it the odor of sanctity, but there was the definite distinctive scent of rose. in his presence, and I still didn't know who he was until at one point I glanced down at his hands, which he was in some way trying to hide or not keep be very conspicuous about, and I noticed the bandages on his hands. And then it suddenly dawned on me to whom I was speaking. And throughout my time, my own time as Bishop of Marquette, Irving came to see me in my office because he always wanted to act in communion with the local church, in communion with the bishop, under the blessing of the bishop. He didn't want to draw attention to himself. This was a very strong theme in Irving's life and the ministry, the apostolate that he became involved with. He never sought to draw attention to himself. He always deflected that to Christ and that he was simply the Lord's humble instrument. And he was always very cooperative with whatever the directions the bishop would give him. I happened to be able to be at his bedside shortly before his death. And those that worked with Irving, that knew him, that love him, and that have promoted this cause also are of a similar disposition, to always be very humble, very obedient to the church and what the church would allow in his ministry and his apostolate. So I agree very much with what Bishop Derfler just said, that I think we need just an ordinary, humble man who attained, I think, some true sanctity in his life as a model for all men. So I very much support the request being put forward by the Bishop of Marquette.
Bishop Paprocki.
Thank you. I also speak in favor of this cause. I think that it would just be a very wonderful thing to have a faithful husband and a father here in the United States someday be declared a saint. So I very much support that. And while we're talking about causes of saints, I also want to take this opportunity to express my appreciation, the appreciation of the people of the diocese in Springfield in Illinois to our Holy Father for declaring Father Augustine Tolton venerable. And I also announced today that it is my intention to establish a shrine of Father Augustine Tolton in Quincy, Illinois, where Father Tolton is buried. Many people currently come to visit his grave at St. Peter's Cemetery in Quincy. And it's my hope to have a shrine there where many people can come and venerate the shrine of Venerable Augustine Tolton. Thank you.
Any other comments? This will be a voice vote. At the request of Bishop John Dorfler, Bishop of Marquette, does the body of bishops consider it advisable to continue to advance on the local level the cause for canonization of the servant of God, Irving Francis C. Hull, in accord with the applicable provisions of the universal law? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. And those abstaining, the ayes have it. No, motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Bishop. Thank you very much. Thank you, Bishop.